Hey, it's Justin, and I have a big announcement and personal invitation for you. This May, we're inviting a small group of people to Austin to learn how to grow their wealth tax-free and get access to some of my personal friends and experts in the industry. We did something similar last year, and the feedback was incredible, so we set aside a few tickets for non-Mastermind members to join us for this event. You'll spend some time learning from Garrett Gunderson, the brilliant and hilarious mind behind Money Unmasked and the New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Killing Sacred Cows, and one of my favorite books, What Would the Rockefellers Do? He's going to share his insights on how to grow your assets tax-free with life insurance. And you'll also get some time with Rob Dial, the mastermind behind the Mindset Mentor podcast, who will share with you how to find fulfillment in success. Then you'll get to participate in a special investment presentation, in-depth discussions, and breakout sessions on two crucial yet often overlooked topics: personalized tax strategies and wealth building. Plus, when you register, you'll have the opportunity to attend a one-day course the day before on vetting deals. If you want to learn our process so that you can make great decisions, there's no better teacher than Hans Box. This is our most requested topic, and it'll be an exceptional course. Seats for the course and the one-day event are limited, so if you're interested, please grab your ticket today. I always say you're just one connection, one decision, and one strategy away from true freedom, and I look forward to helping you on your journey. Head over to lifestyleinvestor.com/live or click the link around this video and secure your ticket now before we sell out. Hope to see you in Austin this May. Once again, that's lifestyleinvestor.com/live. I can't wait to see you there. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome to the Lifestyle Investor Podcast. Imagine being able to earn passive income, build long-term wealth, while gaining total freedom from your business or job. That's what lifestyle investing is all about. I'm your host, Justin Donald, and in less than 2 years, my investments drove enough passive income for both my wife and me to quit our jobs. And now I want to show you how to do the same. I want to teach you how to create wealth without creating a job. You'll learn the exact same investment strategies I use to multiply my net worth to over 8 figures, all before the age of 40. If you want to learn all about low-risk cash flow investing, achieve financial freedom, and live the life you truly desire, this podcast is going to show you exactly how to do it. C.L. Turner is the founder and managing partner of Crescendo Capital. He has invested in over 50 companies and closed 13 platform acquisitions with multiple 8- and 9-figure exits. Through Crescendo, CL primarily focuses on low to middle market businesses valued from $20 million to $150 million and takes them to the next level by providing capital, operational expertise, and a hands-on collaborative approach to enable their organic and acquisitive growth. What differentiates CL's approach with Crescendo from that of countless other companies is that when they invest and acquire companies, they prioritize the cultural and personal fit of the acquisition with the founders and key employees in the company. In our conversation, we dig into leverage buyouts for scaling and exiting, the importance of collaborating with founders and employees when acquiring companies, and CL's strategy for investing that he used to land 8- and 9-figure exits for his clients. One more thing before we get to today's interview. I've got a special gift for Lifestyle Investor podcast listeners. I'm sharing a detailed list of all the books I've read related to money, investing, lifestyle, and personal development. I average reading over 100 books a year, so the list is pretty extensive. Not only that, but you're going to get a PDF that outlines the top 25 books that I recommend every lifestyle investor listen to or read. To get access to this gift, visit justindonald.com/106. Thanks for listening. And without further delay, my conversation with C.L. Turner. What's up, C.L.? So glad to have you on the show.
Happy to be on. Good to see you, JD.
This is awesome. So we've been talking a little bit about having you on the show for a little bit, and I love so much about what you do and who you are. I had the privilege of learning more about you. We, you know, you and I are in the same Tiger 21 chapter here in Austin. And so I had the privilege of hearing your story and kind of how you got to where you are today, and just felt like, what a cool experience and a cool message that I would love for more people to learn from.
I think someone said it before, it's a long and winding road.
Now, one thing I really appreciate about you, before we dig into any details, is you are a music lover. Your depth of knowledge in lyrics, in song titles, in bands goes beyond anyone that I know. I feel like you would just crush it in Music Jeopardy. Where did this appreciation for music come from?
It didn't start with my parents, but I remember my sister taking piano lessons, and she had to play boring stuff, but there were, I first started by two-fingering on the piano to certain songs or on the radio, to where I could get a rudimentary version, and just sort of went from there. But it's always been a passion, and crescendo is a musical term, not by accident.
So crescendo is a musical term. We're going to get to this later, because you have been so inspired by music, you named your company Crescendo. So let's put a pause there, because I don't want to get into the company, into your entrepreneurial journey quite yet. I went to a party. We had our friend who, by the way, had a podcast episode on the show, Chris Taylor, Chris and Rob Taylor, brothers Taylor. Check it out. It's the bootstrap versus VC episode. It's really cool. Which one's better? When do you do it? But Chris held a party in his epic home, one of the most fun entertainment homes out there. And all of a sudden, I hear this unbelievable piano playing, and just the room erupts. Everyone comes over. The party, this is like getting more into the late night, and you are ripping it up on the piano. And I had no clue that your skills were this. And as I understand, you're creating a music album right now, which is a passion. It's like a passion project, I guess.
A vanity project is what I call it, but it has real musicians and real people working on it. So they'll turn my 10 least bad songs into something good. The producer who has worked with Coldplay, the keyboardist tours for Crosby, Stills and Nash, the lead singer had 4 or 5 hits with a band called Click Five a few years ago. And the mixer, who's engaged to a friend of mine, has done work for Jay-Z and Beyonce. So if the songs aren't any good, you can only blame the songwriter.
I like it. That's just incredible. A nice job lining up some epic groups to work with. I think that's so fun. And you're really good. So I'm glad that you're getting this out in the world. It was so fun watching you play and seeing you in your element. You recently moved to Austin. You're from LA, or at least have lived in LA for a long time. What brought you to Austin?
Well, I'm a native Texan, and I lived in Dallas and Houston. And I thought I was in LA temporarily, but I got divorced when my daughter was 4. My ex-wife wanted to return to New York. I wanted to come back to the great state of Texas. So we had an uneasy truce, and I moved when my daughter graduated from high school, which was about a year and a half ago.
Very cool.
My sister lives here in Austin. My best friend is here in Austin. And my wife, despite being from Xinjiang, China, her mentor is also here in Austin, who she originally met in Shanghai.
Well, that's perfect. Great coincidence, maybe beyond a coincidence. So I am curious, when you figured out that you were an entrepreneur, like how did that manifest? Like where did this passion, knowledge, experience, because I feel like you're always a few steps ahead of the game, a few steps ahead of whatever it is that you're doing. When did you know that you were an entrepreneur?
2 inflection points. One, at about age 35, after a fun and busy career as an investment banker, I got to see firsthand how wealth is created in private equity, while income is created in investment banking. And I needed to get to the other side of the table as an investor. And through a variety of ways, I was able to do that over a 5-year rebranding period. But I'm an accidental or coincidental entrepreneur For me, it was about trying to own a couple of businesses and needing some talent around me to accomplish that and manage them. And then a few more deals and a few more guys, and we'll be 10 people soon. And it was not any grand design, but as I said, more incremental.
And when did you start? Like, at what age were you when you, you know, were going down this path? Because, you know, you were in the banking industry, right? And then how old were you? Like, when did you get into banking? And then when did you start Crescendo, which I think is, that's your baby. Is that the first business you started once you went into the entrepreneurial space?
Yes. I was hired after B school on campus as an investment banker for Bank of America, ran a lot, made a little money. One of my clients was Motel 6, and that was really a seminal event for me. I learned that KKR had purchased Motel 6 for $1 billion+ with only $100 million of equity, and they sold it 18 months later for $2 billion+, and they turned 100 of equity into $1 billion+ of equity and shared a fair amount of those spoils. And I said, I'm in the wrong game. And as I said, it took a few years to rebrand, and I did. Was first a principal with a bank associated, bank affiliated investor. But yeah, I formed Crescendo. Initially, I worked for a billionaire out of Nevada who had a private equity portfolio in a couple of areas where I knew a little bit. And we had a common friend I didn't know. And fortuitously, the billionaire needed some help, and I was all too willing to help. And I formed Crescendo at that time. I had a few small stubs in the deals in which he had already invested. And then I got slightly larger stubs in the new deals and formed Crescendo at that time to house those equity positions. Ultimately, he had made his money in real estate, and he was also aging. And neither of those makes for a perfect private equity LP. And so went out on my own and kept the Crescendo flag. And that was about 8 years ago when we bought our first business out of Los Angeles, a Los Angeles-based business. And I think it would have been around 2015 or so. So 35 investment banking from 25 to 35, rebranding from 35 to 40, from 40 to 45, working as an investor under others in different formats, and then from 45 currently on my own.
Yeah, that's incredible how much success you've had in the past 8 years. And I'm excited to dissect that. One of the things I learned about you that is one of the most inspiring things is a story that you shared with me, you know, a question that your daughter made or a comment when she was really young. So back in the day, I think you had a lot of fun and you had your fair share of partying, and
that was a pivotal moment, and I am picturing it in my mind's eye. She'll be 19 soon, and I'm picturing it 15 years ago like it was yesterday. I drank to extreme excess from about age 18 to age 40, 45. And when my daughter was 4, I had her in a grocery cart with her legs dangling facing me, as young kids do, speeding down the aisle to get some milk. And my daughter asked me, or mentioned, "Hey, Dad, you forgot the rum and the beer." And I thought, I won't live long with this kind of alcohol consumption, and I sure don't want my daughter to grow up thinking her dad is a drunk. And had a drink since then. And for me, that journey has been easy because there's an unseen 4-year-old girl on my shoulder that would scream dramatically if I were ever to drink again. So that was a pivotal moment. I have a great relationship with my daughter. My professional career has taken off significantly since then. But that was a life-changing moment. And so our kids talk often about how we help them. My 4-year-old little girl helped me.
That is such a beautiful story. And that is just something that always echoes in the back of my mind. And I love that you were able to make that decision, knowing that this isn't necessarily easy. It's not what you necessarily probably wanted in that moment, but you made a decision based on someone else and a bigger picture decision that ultimately helped you with, you know, your health, with relationships. And then I believe was pivotal for you in being able to have the clarity to do the really cool acquisitions and building Crescendo just the way that you have.
We all have our demons. And I feel fortunate and blessed that, again, I had my daughter in my ear while there was still enough time to take a different turn in life. And for whatever reason, and I empathize with people who struggle with addictions, but it has not been a challenge for me. I've been untruthful. It was easy once I made the decision. But we all have different paths in that regard. That's only been mine. So I've got now a soon-to-be 19-year-old girl whose comment I can thank.
That's fantastic. And what a great tribute that you can pay to her, a great thank you that just you can continue to share with her the influence that she's had on you.
There's another influence that you may not be aware of. When I had never written, I played in bands and played around, but I'd never written a song. And at age 4 or 5, when I divorced, my daughter, as kids do, took a crayon on a yellow piece of manila paper and drew two houses with boxes and smokestacks, as if they had smokestacks in Los Angeles, but with a mom coming out of one, a dad coming out of the other, and a girl in the middle trying unsuccessfully to grasp both hands. And what I can remember, what happened was a song just came out. I saw what you drew, it's your reality, two parents, two houses, two families. I got on my knees and I said a prayer. So help me, God, let me get it right from here. And that song welled from within. And there were some other chaotic life events at that time, some family deaths. What surprised me was when my life stabilized, the songwriting font never stopped. So she was also responsible for turning, for accessing something in me. Half the songs on my album, directly or indirectly, relate to her. But she ignited something I didn't know that I had, and I was halfway through my life at that point. I just thought I was, had a good ear, pretty good keyboardist. If you've got a song, I'd probably bang around with it a little bit. Never thought of myself as a songwriter, but that changed, and music is a big bond we have.
Oh, that's incredible. Thanks for sharing that. I love the influence that our children can have, and like you, I'm a dad with a daughter. And I'm learning lessons all the time. Yes. And a lot of the lessons that I, like in my head, I want to say like, hey, I feel like I'm not a very selfish person, but what comes out sometimes in relationships, in parenting, it's like, whoa, I may be a little more selfish than I thought I was. Like this, you really get tested. I feel like you get to see through a different lens and you can't sugarcoat it, right? Children are an incredible teacher, and I'm glad that you've been able to learn some valuable lessons, as I have, and I plan to learn plenty more over the years.
It's not voluntary, Chase. It will happen on its own accord.
Yeah. Well, it's neat seeing this as kind of the foundation for you and the directions that you've moved. I'd love to explore with you, since you're in the space of mergers, acquisitions, leveraged buyouts. So a lot of times you hear people say an LBO. What is a leveraged buyout?
Leveraged buyout is when you buy a business using a decent proportion of borrowed money to complete the purchase price. In our world, a template might be we pay 4x earnings for a business. And if that's a 5 million earnings, so we'll pay 20 and we'll borrow anywhere from 10 to 15, depending on the circumstances. And the leverage is a great determinant of the equity returns, depending on how the business performs. But that is the L in the LBO, which is interestingly, my wife is a real estate investor and from China, and they only invest in real estate and they only use cash. And if you ask my wife, May, what she's learned from me in our 6 years together, she'll cite one word, leverage.
That's interesting. And by the way, I think sometimes when you hear about leveraged buyouts, there can be this, misunderstanding or this negative connotation to the word, right? A stigma, negative stigma of like, you're a corporate raider, but that's not the case. It can be the case, but more times than not, it's not.
I'm not Boone Pickens, but that is a well Maybe a couple of comments on that. We use a phrase often. I wish I could claim it, but someone else made this great comment. Kind of mining Robert Frost said that the road to humility in private equity is far less traveled. We spend all of our time on that particular road and try to work very collaboratively and almost intimately with the business founders that own the companies in which we invest. What's always true, though, is the people around them, maybe even the owner himself, will see boogeymen that don't exist. And we can say the right things, but what will happen is employees will look for 6 months and they'll look for the boogeyman behind the door and they won't see it. And then 6 months later, you'll see there's actually new activity, new investment, maybe some promotions. And a year later, we're good. We get the owner over that hurdle by giving him references with the 10 or 15 other folks who have been in his shoes before. And we'll say, are we good guys? Do what we say. We'll be helpful to the business, but in an unobtrusive way. And they'll hopefully answer yes to all of that. So usually we have the owner as an ally, but the key employees are reluctant participants in that process. And we try to tell them that we only make money if we grow. And if we grow, that means more activity and more opportunity for others.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I want to create the proper image and, you know, I guess imagery and understanding around what a leveraged buyout is, because they don't have to be adversarial. And more often than not, they're collaborative, right?
They are in our case. We typically, unlike most people who, most firms which acquire businesses, we don't get most of our deals from other investment bankers who are writing books, and we're one of 200 recipients of those books. We have particular sectors where we're somewhat well-known, and we have folks that do outbound initiatives on our behalf, so it's one-on-one. And we lead with culture. We tell, before we discuss valuation, we'll say, both you and us need to believe that this is a good cultural fit, a good personality fit, because if it isn't, it doesn't matter. The math makes sense. We won't make any money. We won't have any fun. And we like to do both.
Yeah. Well, and here's an interesting thing, because CL, you don't have to work. You are incredibly successful. You've built an unbelievable business. You own the portfolio of businesses that Crescendo owns is very attractive. You know, if you wanted, you could completely sell your positions. You could step away. You could build a team. I know you love it, but what I would love to do is figure out, like, how did you get started? So for the person that's listening, that's like, how do I acquire a business? How do I take that first step? What would you recommend?
I got a great piece of advice, which I accepted and followed. When I was working for the billionaire, I was in La Jolla. And when that terminated, I decided to move to Los Angeles. And had some experience buying businesses, but either under a bank flag or under the auspices of this particular billionaire. Now I'm on my own with no good housekeeping seal. How do I get this done? My nose for deals was unchanged, but I didn't have any kind of reputation associated with Crescendo. Someone told me, and I've even forgotten who, that the dean of all, back then the term independent sponsor was used, guys who put deals together on a deal-by-deal basis. The dean was a fellow by the name of Pat Whalen out of a group called Pegasus. Someone suggested what you should do once you get a deal under LOI, and I'm comfortable in owner's offices and getting that done, that you should partner with Pat, give him significant upside in your deal to gain that good housekeeping seal. And that was the approach that I took. So initially, I had to hustle to find deals, to find attractive situations, but I borrowed the track records of a couple of different groups and partnered with them. And by the time the third deal came along, we've done 12 now, three more pending. By the time the third deal came along, I already had bona fides at that point, didn't need to partner with somebody else. And Pat was a good friend, the world's biggest Steely Dan fan. And Pat played a prominent, Pat played a prominent role in the development of Crescendo, in that I had done four or five deals with a roster of collaborators based on geography, bandwidth, geographic proximity, sector expertise. Pat was most prominent among them. Pat died unexpectedly about 5 or 6 years ago. And it was at that point, I either need to join another fund or form infrastructure around Crescendo. And interestingly, a guy who worked for Pat, also a native Texan, he beat me back to Texas by 6 months, but Brian Miller, who I met initially working with Pat Whalen, now Brian Miller's part of the Crescendo team in Austin now. So the two seminal events for me is one, moving from an intermediary to a principal when I saw the vast foils KKR received on the Motel 6 deal. And then
$1 billion. And then short time on that one too, right? It was $1 billion profit in what?
Months. There's even a story behind that. Later in life, I won't say where because it would give the name away. I was in the office of a former KKR partner who had some Motel 6 books. And I told him I later became a Motel 6 investment banker when they were owned by the French transportation conglomerate, Accor. And I said, tell me that you guys know that the French, you knew that the French were coming, so you just squatted on the only lower price point asset. And you beat them to the punch, and you held it to ransom when they decided they needed it. He said, we had no idea. He said some other words, but those are the ones that we can have on this telecast. And he was telling me about their value add. And KKR has obviously got a great name, but I remember the story said we wanted to improve cleanliness scores, and we did so by buying Cadillac vacuums, two for each floor for every unit under the Motel 6 name, and the scores kept plummeting. And the reason was they bought vacuum cleaners that didn't fit under the beds and didn't fit under the furniture. And a largely immigrant employee base was unwilling to raise their hand and tell the man that the shiny new vacuum cleaners don't work. But at any rate, that obviously private equity is more complex than that. But that was an event. And then I had three deals under LOI, planning to work with Pat on at least two of them, one of which became our best ever return, where we made almost 30 times our money.
That's the plumbing company, right?
That's the plumbing business. And Pat died, and I had to find partners, and we've sort of added a person or two every year since then.
But oh, that's incredible.
We had a healthy respect, Brian and I do, for Pat. And and not only does Brian work with me, but Pat's son will likely intern with us.
Oh,
with,
that's cool.
That's a great guy.
Full circle. That's amazing.
We owe Pat.
Oh, it's great that you could borrow his reputation. What a great lesson. When you don't have a reputation, borrow someone else's and build yours.
Don't be greedy early. But I knew I was trading economics for a track record and an ability to get deals done. And it was temporary. Later, the economic, when we agreed to collaborate on deals, the economic splits were different than those that I had to offer early on. But it was good advice, and I took it. It worked for two or three other groups that I partnered with, and it worked for me.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Great advice. And you said it. I just want to reemphasize it. Don't be greedy. Take less. Partner up. Give away equity in situations where it can be advantageous for all parties, because a lot of people want, you know, 100% of the pie, but a smaller percentage of a bigger pie is always going to be a winner. And you got to partner wisely, and you've got to think about, you know, when you are partnering, if we do break up, which likely at some point in time you're going to break up, what does that look like? Let's spell it out early, so that way it's not as complicated if and when that happens. But pick your partners wisely, and then don't be afraid to partner and learn the lessons along the way. And then when it's time to split, you split and find other people that you can partner with as you grow and as you learn and as you evolve.
You split out.
Yeah, that's good. So give us some details here. I know some of these details, but whatever you're willing to share on your most successful deal to date. And, you know, a 30x return is incredible.
Almost. We've had three or four transactions in the renovation, repair, construction, building, restoration trades where we've returned at least 7-8 times our money. And it's been a spectacular run.
I just want to pause for a second. Most people never even have a 7 and 8x, like never, ever. Like that is the greatest gift in the world. Like people get excited when they get a 2x, you know? So you're talking about 7 or 8x. Yeah.
they're not all, but we hit on something where we are almost running, I won't say on a hose, but we've hit on a niche that works three or four different ways. Like everything, didn't happen by grand design. It happened over time coincidentally. I can tell you, most of the guys who found the businesses where we invest, most of them are hardworking, salt of the earth, very independent. Very few of them went to college. And we, Crescendo, market ourselves to be friendly and helpful to that very specific kind of entrepreneur. That guy will not react well to any whiff of condescension, nor to some notion that a 29-year-old newly minted MBA in Soho is going to tell him how to run his business. We are regular guys. We are Texans. We are Midwesterners. And that approach resonates with the kinds of guys who build businesses. And we're able to buy them well. We buy them well because we source them on a proprietary basis, but we are able to show, and this is key, we've got three or four examples now where we can show owners reinvested a couple million bucks with us in their deals, and they exited at 20 million plus.
Wow.
And it's never stated quite like this, but what the de facto, the unspoken conversation is, please don't press us hard for every last dollar on the entry price. Because it's the exit where we're focused. So that's how we get entry prices that are done relatively attractively. But there is a phenomenon in the sectors where we trade where a single market, single business, subscale, less than 10 million profit, those businesses just don't trade more than 3, 4 to 5 times earnings. We don't make those rules. Those rules are set by the market. There are reasons why. But if you can take one of those businesses and then one in Phoenix and append it to one in Austin and append it to one in Jacksonville and Charlotte and create a business that is diversified and now making $20, $25 million of profit, and that's more or less what we've done in every single example, that business, before you've made any improvement to operations, has gone from being worth 4X to being worth 6, 6.25X. And then when you pay down debt, that's more equity value. When you can improve the operations in a variety of ways, that creates equity value. And so the market has said, when you get to an aggregated basis, it's worth 6 or 7 times. But when it's done singly and individually, it's worth 4. But if you think about an equity value, if you buy a business at 4X and you borrow 3 and you invest 1X, and you do that 3 or 4 times, and it's then worth 6.5X. Well, all of that improvement falls to the equity. So your 1X has gone to 4X before you've improved the people, process, and systems, organic growth, and the like. And we've hit on what seems to us to be an overstated valuation gap between companies of different sizes. Whether the small one is penalized too much or the premium is too high on the larger one, that is a valuation gap and delta that we can fix. And it's something owners can't do themselves. And so we approach them in a very collaborative partnership way. We don't run businesses. We don't sling hammers or turn wrenches. But with your expertise, if you're acquiring a best-in-class operator and our M&A skills together, we can build a much more valuable platform. And as I said, we've taken 3 or 4 of them to 9-figure exits, some of them very publicly so.
I just wanted to take a quick moment to let you know about a special offer that I created for the Lifestyle Investor community. When I look back at my investing journey, there's one specific investment in particular that was the spark to increasing my net worth and allowing me to leave my job to become a lifestyle investor.
I'm talking about mobile home parks. Yes, mobile home parks. If you just cringed a little, that's exactly why these provide such a great opportunity, because of the negative stigma and stereotype people might have. In reality, this is an incredible investment that you can get into with little or no money down. You can also quickly get a return on your capital. You can immediately cash flow on day one. You can hold it forever as a cash cow. You get accelerated depreciation to reduce or eliminate the taxes that you would owe. And often the seller will finance the deal, so you don't need a bank. You can also buy them at the highest cap rate of all real estate, meaning it's the cheapest real estate to buy based on the income that it generates. And it's the lowest default rate of all real estate, meaning it's the safest asset class to own in real estate. I use this asset class to start my journey in real estate investing and grow my net worth to over eight figures all before I turned 40. And out of all the questions that people ask me, how do I get into mobile home parks is still the number one question that I get, which is why I put together this Mobile Home Park Masterclass. This is a paid class that I'm offering for a limited time only. For all the details, head over to justindonald.com/MHP and watch the video, which outlines all the details about the class and exactly what you get when you sign up. You'll also hear the incredible success stories from students who have gone through my content and are now making hundreds of thousands of dollars in passive income. If you want to take the same first step that I did that helped me take both my wife and I from working full-time jobs to becoming lifestyle investors, join me in my Mobile Home Park Masterclass and let's get started on your journey to becoming a lifestyle investor. Visit justindonald.com/MHP for all the details.
That's incredible. And I love hearing all the incremental increases in value. You know, how do you go from a 4X to a 6X? And, you know, one of the things, one of the catchy phrases that you'll hear people talking about is rolling up a company or rolling up a portfolio. And so you kind of hit the nail on the head here with this one, CL, where you said, yeah, as a standalone business, that's a 4X. But when you got a few of them, well, now you can have that 6X. And there's a lot of industries where the gap's even larger, where it's not just a 2X spread. And by the way, at scale, fully maximized, I mean, your spread is much greater in your industry, but there are certain niches where that like multiple is like 10X difference. The delta is 10, the delta is 20. It's just incredible.
You really need to look at the delta to the equity, because if you put them together and the value goes from 4X to 6X, the debt didn't change. You bought them all at 4X, you borrowed 3. So your debt's 3, meaning the equity just went from 1X to 3X. A 3X growth in equity is obviously far more pronounced than a 50% improvement in the overall multiple. That gets back to your leverage question. But the market, there are 10 or 12 markets where we focus on: Sacramento, Reno, Denver, Phoenix, Vegas, Dallas, Austin, Houston, Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, Charlotte, Nashville. We'll do others on an exception basis. But if you can take best-in-class providers in those high-growing, high-profile markets, and you can put them together, you're already starting the 3 or 4X return on your equity before you make any operational improvements or do any of the other things that we try to do with portfolio companies. So it's two-pronged. There is a financial arbitrage gain, and then there's an actual improvement gain. And you know, you try to get both.
Yeah. And why those markets? Why do you like those 10, 12 markets better than other places that you didn't name? Because there are other big cities that could be on the list, but I know you've got a specific reason why you like those markets.
Sure. Well, one, they have critical mass. Two, they are high growth markets. And three, they are generally business friendly. And what I would say, we have and do own one UU business. We won't own another. It's the challenges are 5X easy fold. A normal business. So if you're working in the trade businesses, big, growing, non-union, business friendly.
Yeah. And by the way, I have to say, I mean, plumbing is an incredible business to be in. The margins are incredible. And this is coming from a guy who also owns a construction company, a maintenance company. And the margin that you can make in the plumbing space is just astronomical. Everyone needs it. And a lot of the people that are running these are mom and pop operations. So if you come in with any sort of operational know-how, any sort of ability to scale and create systems and frameworks and use software, the returns could be the 30x like you have experienced here with this company. And in general, I love home services. Like anything in that space is incredible. You've got the B2B option, you know, the business to business. You got the B2C option. I love as much B2B as I can do, but you are never going to be a shortage for customers when you're in home services.
That's true. It's worth noting our approach, though, is very different than others. Many people are aggregating service plays, buying them at 7 to 10x, hoping to aggregate them and sell them for 12 to 15x. Our approach thus far, and it's changing with the likely downturn in the economy, the approach that worked for us in plumbing, same thing in swimming pools, to a lesser extent in gates and some other businesses, is we've come in through the construction and refurb and bought best in class and best markets there. What we know is the DNA required to build a service business is very different than a builder. And we'll say it is essentially to the operator, you have autonomy within the construction piece that you've run admirably for 25 years. If you could have done service, you would have. We know it's a different skill set. We've got that. And from a financial standpoint, we now have some experience in building out services within a construction play and with a partitioned, almost a partitioned business, using the construction piece and the install base as a big feeder. The key here is when we buy the dominant pool business or plumbing business or gate business on an installation front, you're getting free option on the service piece. So as we're thinking into the math, how do we create returns? Well, there's a financial arbitrage, there's an ops improvement arbitrage, and then we have the ability to take a huge installed base, name your trade, and build out a service platform there for which it doesn't exist today, but is ripe for the picking. And that makes a more valuable composite business when we sell if everything works right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love anytime a deal has multiple ways of making money, multiple arbitrage strategies. And one that I would also throw out there that has been very advantageous for me has been a technology arbitrage. You know, I started a company with a couple of friends called IFM Restoration, and this company services single family home rentals for the largest owners, institutional owners.
We may be competitors soon.
That's right. That's right. There's so much opportunity in that space, but the interesting thing is we were a service company, right? We were doing maintenance on these. At one point we were doing rehabs, full rehabs, second rehabs, turns. We really found that our sweet spot, our bread and butter was maintenance. We also found that the margins there are better. It's easier to float it. There's just so many reasons that we stuck with maintenance. And certainly there are like different specific, you know, I guess job orders or you know, maintenance requests that are better than others, higher margin than others. And, you know, we always love plumbing. Plumbing is always one of our favorites. But what we did is we took this service-based company and we built our own proprietary software on it so that we could make the leap from a service company that might get that 3 or 4x multiple to a technology company that now, since we have our own proprietary software that we're running, you know, work orders through, we now get a multiple on revenue and instead of just EBITDA or profit. Just a nice shift in the way that you look at it, the way that you define the company. And that has allowed us to raise really good money from, you know, our VC partners and, you know, other investors as they like that tech component. So your company went from, you know, it had a valuation based on a three, for us, it was like 3X, right? 3X EBITDA. to, you know, you can get to the point where you're like a 10, a 15, a 20X revenue. And it sounds crazy, but you're talking about night and day difference in the valuation of a company.
We have, we're aware of that, but we've never, it's never been actionable for us for a couple of reasons. It is worth noting though, in the service business, one other profit lever, when you have an install base and a construction base, what you generally don't have to pay much for is sales and marketing, where because the leads, for example, in our pool business, we have very substantial pool business in 3 states and 5 markets. We can attach maintenance contracts to 60% of those pool sales, which is half. But sales and marketing is a significant expense for most service-only companies, and we're, that's typically modest for us. The challenge, completely understanding your point, the challenge for us, though, is we'll take a guy who has a business in Phoenix, for example, and then we say that we're going from Phoenix and we're going to try to acquire in 4 or 12 of these other markets, and we're going to have to build personnel infrastructure around that, and we're going to have different reporting, and we're going to introduce you to 1 or 2 additional trades, and we're going to add follow-on service to that. The last part, we can only do a couple of things. And it's also, would be fair to say, it's not a strength of ours. But when we see these businesses, we look at value levers, and there might be 8 or 10 on a piece of paper somewhere. We're talking to a very successful guy who sometimes begrudgingly gives us permission to make modest changes. And so we have to force rank. That would be a growth lever. And I salivate at looking at businesses that trade off revenue multiples. I mean, 10x earnings sounds high to me. I think we should get 2 companies. And 10x revenue, unlikely affiliated, and it's not really a Crescendo business, more of a personal investment, likely affiliated in one business that trades on a multiple basis. And it's staggeringly different.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. And I mean, that's the beauty of being an investor, being able to figure out how to hedge what your current operation is. So if you're an entrepreneur, you have a lot of your eggs in that entrepreneurial basket. So then how do you hedge that risk and that income, and how do you place some of that income in some other bets that could have a big payoff, but at the same time are low risk, because you don't want to lose capital. That's the number one thing you don't want to do, is lose capital, except maybe early on to learn the lessons that you need to learn so that in the future you don't lose capital, sure. You know, or lose as much. So, hey, CL, this has been incredible. I just love having you on the show. There's so many cool things that we're able to get into. I appreciate your expertise. Where can people find out more about you and Crescendo if they want to learn more?
Easy enough. CrescendoCap.com. Crescendo, CRESCENDO. And we're also on LinkedIn as well. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And you, again, leaving me with envy with respect to 10X revenue. Wish we could do that.
Well, there will always be the niche industries where you can. There are always going to be seasons where you can. There are going to be seasons where that changes and where the 10X becomes a 5X. And so it's good to capitalize when you can capitalize. I think we're moving from a frothy, you know, very excessive just valuations and market, especially on the private side, public too. I mean, both. And you're moving into an area where I don't think the valuations are going to be the same. Certainly, debt is a lot more expensive today. It makes the leverage buyouts or any sort of deal where you're using leverage to get it a lot more expensive, a lot tougher to paper, and valuations are going to shift because of that. So I think it's smart to know the right seasons to sell and the right seasons to hold. And you have just done incredible things. So
is that like know when to hold them and know when to fold them?
That's right. That's right. That's a good song. And what a great ending note. I would love to kind of wrap this up in the similar fashion that I always do. I want to make a closing remark, and then I've got a thought prior to that. I've been getting a lot of feedback from people, a lot of interest, people wondering, how do I learn more and get more involved in the lifestyle investor community? And I would say for the right fit, for the right person, for someone that's ready to take their knowledge base to the next level, apply to Lifestyle Investor Mastermind, the world's most exclusive mastermind for savvy investors looking to regain control of their time, build their wealth, looking through invisible deals that the general public doesn't get a chance to see, deals that are negotiated ahead of time with preferred terms that de-risk the deal or amplify the multiples. So check out more information at lifestyleinvestor.com/mastermind. And in closing, I just want to ask you one question, as I always do every week, which is this: what is one step that you can take today to move towards financial freedom and living a life that you truly desire, that's on your terms, not by default, but by design? We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening to the Lifestyle Investor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe so future episodes are automatically downloaded directly to your device. You can also leave an honest rating and review over on iTunes. Not only do I read every single one, but it also helps me understand what content matters the most to our audience. And if you can think of one or two people who could benefit from this episode, would you share it with them right now? Who knows? Maybe they'll buy you something nice when they make their first million. If you would like access to today's show notes, including links to all the resources mentioned, visit www.justindonald.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week for another episode of The Lifestyle Investor.